Welcome to Preaching Podcasts. For those who proclaim publicly, this is a weekly podcast from the Stevenson School of Ministry in the Diocese of Central Pennsylvania, where we take a look at the lectionary from diverse and unique perspectives to help prepare church leaders for Sunday worship. I'm your host, Deirdre Good, and with me today is Josh Davis and Althea Spencer-Miller.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks so much. So today we're going to look at the readings for Palm Sunday. And we've got the Liturgy of the Palms in front of us, as well as the Liturgy of the Word. And we thought what we might do, given the way in which our current situation in the middle, we find ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, not just locally or nationally, but internationally and globally. We thought we might concentrate on the reading in the middle of the Liturgy of the Word, Psalm 31. And it's a part of Psalm 31. It's verses 9 to 16. So we might look outside that. We might look outside that selection of verses as well. But we could start with this psalm. We are in the midst of a pandemic, and we are struggling locally, individually, nationally, to come to terms with it. And our liturgy invites us to consider the ways in which our situation is going to be played out as the narrative of Holy Week, the start of which is Palm Sunday, as the narrative of Holy Week develops. So what we want to do is concentrate on Psalm 31. We'll have a conversation about that.
We are faced with a pandemic, and it seems that one of the things we are confronted with is not only the illness, but how to make sense of it, given our faith. Given the texts that we think about our faith with, Psalm 31 being one of those texts, what are the resources that we have in it to either be encouraged, to get hope, or to have some profound understanding of what it means to be a person of faith in a time of pandemic? And the passages that we have for Palm Sunday don't readily lend themselves to paradigms of faith and confidence, but perhaps invite us to share in a journey of fear and vulnerability and anxiety, mm-hmm. as ultimate realities. Death, for example, debilitating illness confronts us as part of the human race, whether we're Christians or not in this time.
The language of the psalmist here is that of an individual. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. So it's an individual speaking collectively.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's an individual is so helpful, because each one of us experiences trouble in different ways and in different circumstances. But trouble or sorrow, in the words of verse 9, and physical manifestations of that are a place that we start. So I think what the pandemic is making us take more seriously is an awareness of our own mortality, an awareness of our own death, an awareness of the likelihood that people around us, people even close to us, maybe even we ourselves, are being confronted with not just one or two deaths, but a large number of deaths. And trying to come to terms with that is really, really very difficult.
I am not sure who this psalmist is, but in our present situation, this pandemic is a great leveler. Mm-hmm. It's almost a situation where no matter And the way our resources are being corralled to address it. It's a great leveler. I know that we have some sporting stars and maybe some members of Congress who've been able to access testing, but it's almost as if it doesn't matter whether you have health insurance or not. Do you have the symptoms of severity that enable you to be tested? That's how it's been in the early stages. So it doesn't even matter whether you're ill. So your the resources that we usually have to protect ourselves or to gain some distance from the worst impacts of life's debilitating events or causes have been nullified to some extent in this time. So we are laid bare in vulnerability before this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if we can't fool. It would be a fool's journey to live in an illusion that there is something that protects us from its impact.
There are two things that I think about in the midst of this. There's obviously, as Deirdre and Althea are pointing out, there's the issue of confronting our own mortality. But one of the things that I'm thinking about, the constant refrain throughout the Psalms and within the prophets, which is the stupidity and injustice of leaders, and how we will all die, but there is lots of needless death as
mm-hmm.
well
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
of the
mm-hmm.
gods that we serve. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that is repeated again and again in the prophets. You know, you sacrifice your children to this illusion.
Mm-hmm.
God never wants that. God has never asked of that. In this case, we're talking about and prepared to sacrifice the elderly or the mm-hmm. There's even things being said about universal DNRs, do not resuscitate. For anyone who codes mm-hmm. with the mm-hmm. virus, mm-hmm. despite their own individual directions with regard to resuscitation, there's just a whole host of things going on here, and I'm struck by the psalmist, you know, talking about the sorrow, the giving voice to the individual pain and alienation and frustration and reaching out to God and clinging to God in the midst of that. And, but the thing that that in doing that, the psalmist does as well as the prophet is refuses to let us to take, easy consolation. It seems like that's always what the psalmists and the prophets are working against, this desire that we have to want for things to be normal amidst, mm-hmm. but it's that drive toward being normal that is, or normalcy, I should say, that is part of what's driving this destructive thing that we're having to confront. The feeling that, you know, my life is wasted with grief and my years with sighing, my strength fails me because of affliction and my bones are consumed. And that it's from the middle of that pain and that struggle that we cry out to God. And the other thing that I was thinking along those lines is it struck me for the first time as we were talking about this, that this is a discussion around the scriptures for Palm Sunday. And, the reception of Jesus into Jerusalem like a king,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's Zechariah that's the riding
yep.
on a donkey.
Yep.
That's the being performed there, but the but how immediate, I mean, it's always so interesting in Holy Week because you start off on that Sunday prior to, you know, everything is wonderful, and then it turns dark very quickly, and that's exactly what happens with the Passion. And it's a very, very similar thing happened around this, we were just going about our day. And then all of a sudden it was like, this is going to get bad. And then we're in lockdown, and thinking about the, you know, the disciples afterwards, you know, huddled in their homes after the crucifixion of Jesus. Those are all things that are just sort of, bouncing around the walls of my mind as I think about these, reading these scriptures in anticipation of Holy Week and the Sunday prior and Palm Sunday, but, you know, doing so in the middle of, you know, a quarantine situation for most of the country, and just thinking about how these might, how the this situation and these scriptures and this period, this season within the church's life might speak to one another in that time.
Well, okay. I was just going to say that, Josh, talking about the leaders and the responses, we actually do have a division of leadership. And if I move in terms of constructive and hope-filled responses or hope-giving responses and the ostrich kind of response that pretends as if this thing is not as severe as it should be, and it really generates a Johnny come lately approach to taking it seriously. But I think for those of us who are just ordinary human beings, not leaders, it seems to me that there's a way in which this experience is giving us an opportunity for a kind of moral clarity about our connectedness as human beings, but also to discern the difference between being clear-eyed and being murky in perception about the ability, and I think it's present here somehow in all the groan and lament of the Psalms, to actually acknowledge that the situation is urgent, is seriously flawed and problematic, and then to be able to search for the ways of responding to it that are useful and healing and life-giving. We have this opportunity to discern on a large stage what are the better ways of dealing with crises, what are the good ways of dealing with crises, and what do they teach us about our relationship to each other, and position us to make meaningful choices about where we place our trust, where we place our hope.
I was thinking of the ways in which the psalmist spends at least half of the number of verses we've been assigned describing in some detail the situation in which the psalmist finds him or herself. So extrapolating or describing in detail the situation of powerlessness, the situation of lack of agency, the situation of humiliation, I did not hide my face from insult and spitting, the being struck by other people physically, being put to shame, being insulted and shamed by adversaries, the physical and the social implications set side by side, that actually what lamentation, which is what I was going to call all preachers to, I was going to invite all preachers to create liturgies of lament to describe the situation and the plight in which we find ourselves. Because through the articulation of all the different social and physical aspects of isolation, there might be an honest way forward. But without that honest description of the plight in which we find ourselves, without the rosy, without instead being given rosy pictures of our reality, which are just not true, without an honest appraisal, I don't think we know where we are. I think rosy pictures just allow us to live in further states of delusion. So that, for me, is something that the psalmist is is trying to do. And I find that very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, have mercy on me, for I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, Josh, because in the text that I'm looking at, the text that is in front of me in the lectionary cycle, it's just the identification of the psalm, and then underneath the Latin, you know, the Latin is always the preface to the psalm itself. And the Latin doesn't refer to verse 9. It refers to verse 1. And verse 1 has been deliberately excluded from this section because what verse 1 is doing is saying, in you, Lord, I have hope. And that's exactly what verse 9 through 16 is not saying. Do you see? And that's what we're trying to, what we're trying to say could be a snare and a delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I would think about the bookends of the entire psalm, now that you've pointed us to Psalm 1, that this clear articulation of the direness of the psalmist's situation has not prevented the psalmist from starting on this note of in you, O Lord, I seek rescue.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, the reason for seeking rescue from the Lord is actually because I am in trouble. If I don't, as you were saying, Deirdre, if you don't acknowledge that you are in trouble, you don't know where you are and you don't know what to pray for. Mm-hmm. You don't know what to cry out for. And that the psalmist turns to the God who ought to be the being who could protect the psalmist from this trouble. So it might sound like desperation, but I ponder the paradox of trust and faith that this is not a punishment, but actually because I am in desperate trouble, the one being that has the potential to be my salvation is the being I turn to. So I start by reminding God who God is to me. And the psalmist ends by saying, submission, my times are in your hand. The psalmist has recognized his or her impotency and turned with all that powerful vulnerability to say, my times are in your hand. You know, be the one to rescue me from the hand of my enemies. So in a sense, to some extent, it ends where it begins, but it has the interpolation of, I am in a bad way, dear God.
Comfort, actually, the thing that I'm alighting on here, in addition to everything else that you were saying, Althea, is the readiness to name enemies. I think at the same time, the reluctance to admit trouble and affliction or to admit the situation that you're in. I think a lot of times we have a tendency to not want to admit that there are enemies, you know? And I don't necessarily mean my enemy, but in the same way that we were talking about, it's something that the psalmists and the prophets consistently lament, the devotion to gods that require, you know, the sacrifice of life, and the stupidity of leaders or that there are enemies to life, and to name that and to say I'm powerless against the power that they have over me, but I know, God, that you desire to bring life and to give life. I think that is important as well. It's not always a can't we all get along kind of a situation. Sometimes the stakes are higher than that.
I don't want to ever infer that this pandemic is a gift from God. Nor do I want to ever convey that it's a punishment. But I want to look at it opportunistically to contemplate what might I learn that makes me a wiser human being, a more compassionate human being, a gentler soul when I come out on the other side. And that very verse 11 that you just mentioned, Josh, yeah, we do have enemies. But this psalmist's reproach, there is something just totally abased and abysmal about it, because he's a he or she's a reproach to enemies, a reproach to neighbors, a dismay to acquaintances, and absolutely no one wants to be seen on the street with this person. I socially, I don't know if you can get any more base than that, where the hostility of life is not just embodied in whoever we might consider to be our enemies, but there is something going on that is so profoundly an assault on our being that we are stripped of things we have regarded as constituting our humanness. You know, his next verse, "I'm forgotten like a dead man, out of mind, as useless as a broken pot." That is so derelict a situation for this psalmist to be in. That is the kind of thing you wonder, how do you rise from it?
Yeah. I mean, that is the question. What is the pivot? What is it that makes it possible to move or to stay or to change that state? And in this particular psalm, it's in verse 14. It's the declaration of something external of value. I trust in you, O Lord, I say, you are my God. Something that has nothing to do with me, but is completely outside and completely other, powerful, more holy. But still, that doesn't mean that verse 15, there's any chronology that's possible.
Yeah, it's not an automatic guarantee, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
I've often heard folks say it's one thing to believe in God when everything is going well. It's quite a different experience to dare to trust in God when things are absolutely not going well. Mm-hmm. And that might be part of the challenge of the time. And for some of us, it's more instinctual to actually do that, to trust in God in this time. For many people who have practiced faith through dire situations, who have known their lives to be in the hands of God, they have practice in this. There are others of us who don't. And the contest, the debate will be, who is more right? To trust in God in this time or to give up on God. And part of it's for me, it's not only do you continue to believe in the existence and the power of God, it's do you continue to believe in, to become more committed to practice with greater insistence and fervor the values that are of God's kingdom. The values of compassion, the values that we all can agree on are good. Do we continue to believe that relationships with each other actually matter for such a time as for times like these? You know, and one of the things that this pandemic has gifted us with, I should avoid that word gift, but has given to us is in isolation, we recognize how much we need each other. That's one thing. We recognize how wrong it has been to deprive some people of the benefits of the society. Ultimately, it rebounds on all of us and affects our lives in so many ways. And there are other things that we can think of that a pandemic like this exposes the cracks in our coexistence and calls us to a better way. And is that a way of thinking about trusting in God, trusting in the things that we believe God has called us to, of justice, of fellowship, of belonging to each other, of being cognizant of the needs of the weakest among us, of the fragility and frailty and sometimes just plain pig-headedness of those who are our leaders, the way in which the demonic can enter into governance. Mm-hmm. Now, these are ways the kingdom calls us. So do we go to those, mm-hmm. or do we totally fall apart on the rock of a certain kind of debauchery?
When you said something about, Althea, how the deprivation of community, the way we might deprive people of community, is a downside. It's an example of removing people from society. Are you thinking of people imprisoned, inside people?
You mean like the incarcerated?
Yeah.
I didn't, but I think certainly that's a prime example. But I also think of the ways in which we strategize to alienate ourselves from all kinds of people also, as a collective, as a society, but also to the ways in which we are committed to a me first, me only.
Right.
Kind of theology, kind of life, and to see how false that is.
Right.
And how inadequate.
So the way in which we have middle-class lifestyles, for example, that exclude non-middle-class people. We live in gated communities, stuff like that.
Stuff like that, as well as what you've said, incarcerated, what Josh said, no, there are segments of our society, and I would readily say evilly, mm-hmm. thinking that you can just decide who lives and who dies mm-hmm. on the basis of age. When there's nothing in our present reality that requires that, you know, that the notion of sacrifice can be predetermined by a segment of the society for others. Those are alienations that we're creating. But I'm also thinking that when we turn to God for rescue, one of the things that struck me in the Psalm, verses 11 through 13, especially 13, for some reason, this person is experiencing a kind of social exile.
Yep.
This person is being perceived as a frightening human being, someone that others should be very afraid of. Whether this psalmist is innocent or guilty, this psalmist is reaching out to God because this kind of social alienation is leading to the actual threat of life, but also to a profound failure of the capacity of a society to include persons. But this person turns to God.
Yep.
And it's not just words. It's our convictions. It's our beliefs. It's the actions that follow. It's what we vote for as policy that lines up right up beyond what we're saying when we say, God, rescue me.
Very helpful. Thank you. All right. Well, we will have more time, God willing, to be together doing podcasts in the days and weeks to come. And so we will continue to try and discuss together ways that might help us through biblical and theological reflection make sense of our present circumstances. So I want to thank you both for helping to launch us on this task. And I look forward to our discussions in the days and weeks to come. Thank you very much.
And ongoing prayers for the well-being of all.
So until next time, please take care. Goodbye.